Dr. Eugene Braunwald, 60 years of research, hundreds and hundreds of papers, hundreds of thousands of citations of those papers. You are one of those guys who made modern medicine. And I'm dying to ask you to both look back at what you did and your generation did. I'd love you also to imagine if you were entering your career today in 2014 with 60 years to work, where would you focus? What would the ambition be? But start looking back at what a lot of people would consider, shall we say, a mixed blessing of modern medicine. They can't find their doctor. It costs much too much. The patient-doctor relationship seems to be fragmented. The hospitals are the heroes of this story now. What is this thing that your generation built?
Well, it's actually been 64 years. I've been interested in the treatment of patients with heart attacks right from the very beginning of my career, even as a student, and continuing on this actually today. If you think of the concept of a heart attack in 1950, it was an act of God. People, mostly men, were struck down like a bolt out of the blue and either died or became incapacitated. You know, heart attack victims need to be treated immediately. That was not possible. And people didn't appreciate the diagnosis of a heart attack. So they would be driven or take a bus to go to the hospital. When they got into the hospital, they would wait in the emergency room. They'd sometimes wait an hour or two, depending on how busy the emergency room was. And all that time, they're at tremendous risk. Then they'd get to the floor of the hospital. So between the time that they had this crushing pain and the time they saw a doctor to take care of them was on the average 8 to 10 hours. And now we know that 30% would die in that time because that's where the risk is. Then, once they got there, they were treated by sedation and by putting them as far as possible from the nurse's unit so that they wouldn't be disturbed. They had a wounded heart, and that wounded heart, like a broken bone, had to be rested so that it wouldn't rupture. And the mortality in the hospital was another 30%. If they got into hospital and actually got to the point of discharge.
Can I help remember it by just noting that the President of the United States suffered one of those heart attacks in 1955, and Boston's most famous doctor, Paul Dudley White, had him in his care, but he knew practically nothing about what was going on inside that heart, I think.
Well, let's put it this way. If you read the textbooks of that time, which was a time when I was in training, it's very easy to see what people knew, and I think you're correct. They didn't know very much. Patient has a heart attack today. They know pretty well that they or a member of the family know, first of all, who is at risk. It isn't a bolt out of the blue. It isn't an act of God because people have their risk assessed. And we know high blood pressure is a risk factor, high cholesterol, cigarette smoking, diabetes. And I think that that is widely appreciated. Now, that doesn't mean that heart attacks don't come. Obviously, they do. Our hospitals are full of them. But it's not a bolt out of the blue. We know what produces the atherosclerotic process, and we know that there is a plaque in the coronary artery that ruptures and causes a blood clot to form. So it's not a bolt out of the blue, number one. It's preventable. And this prevention is working. Call 911 now. People tell you you should not, under any circumstances, be driven to the hospital because you need care in the ambulance. And there'll be a physician in the emergency room who says, yes, we know patient with a heart attack is coming in. Here's the electrocardiogram. Time is muscle. Time is everything. They come in, and the cardiac cath laboratory are prepared. They drop whatever else they're doing. There are nurses on call. The time the patient hits the door to the time they get that blood vessel opened is public knowledge. The hospitals have to report that. And the magic time is 90 minutes, and the whole country is working to try to, the world is how to reduce that from 90 minutes to 60 minutes. And the reason for doing that is what I've been so interested in, been working on for a long, long time, is the irreversibility of the damage to the heart when it doesn't get its oxygen supply normally. So I think there's a radical change for every aspect. Now, as far as care is concerned, we're doing exactly the opposite of what I saw when I was in training. I think we're the mortality rate of patients who reach the hospital now with a heart attack is about 3%. The hospital mortality was 30% in 1950, but I believe, and I'm absolutely sure, 30% died before they ever reached the hospital because of the delays and the fact that nobody appreciated what was going on.
What is the big number you use with a simple comparison to summarize the gain against death by sudden heart attack?
I would say from 60% to 3%.
We praise God for doctors, but I want you to look at the other side of it, the alienation of patients and doctors, the untreated population, the overtreated population, the incredible expense, what, 17% of the GNP that now goes into this system. What's missing? Why aren't people happy with their health, much less their health care these days?
I don't think that people now have an appreciation of what it was like 50 or 60 years ago. If you looked at it that way, you'd say, well, we're very, very lucky at the present time. But I don't think that there is a collective memory. I think our healthcare system is broken. I'm not an expert in healthcare systems. I think that it's fragmented. I think that one of the most important things that we have lost in the healthcare system is continuity of care. I think the organization of the delivery of care is what has people very frightened and upset and alienated, and I think it leads to doctor burnout.
A colleague of yours and a friend of mine, Bernard Lowne, said to me years ago, he wrote it in a book and he said it on our radio show, the most important medical device ever invented was the patient-doctor interview, even if the dime doesn't drop until the second hour or the third visit. But that's where the patient's truth comes out. He also likes to say that the most important medical procedure is the laying on of a doctor's hands on the patient. It happens very rarely these days.
Well, Bernard Lowne is one of my heroes. And I think that I couldn't agree more with what he said. I think that the medical history is a very powerful tool which seems to have slipped from people's attention. You know, primary care doctors in particular, this, you know, gets down to the organization of medicine. It doesn't get down to an understanding of the biology of the body. You know, they have to see three patients an hour. And if they see, you know, 20 minutes, it takes elderly patients between 5 and 10 minutes to get undressed. And, you know, the doctor is working on a computer and looking at the computer and asking a question. The patient is sitting there and you see the doctor typing away. Well, I think that that is an enormous problem. You know, he should have, or she should have, an hour to see the patient.
Dr. Brownwell, look ahead. Imagine you're coming out of medical school, burning to transform a system today, and you might have 60 years to work at it. Where would you set your sights?
I think the last 60 years or so have been the era of the heart. So I think that it's been a wonderful ride to have sort of by accident gotten into cardiology when I was a student and then stayed in it. Well, I think this next 60-year period is going to be a period of the brain. Because if I look back to cardiology in the 1950s, why did this happen? Because the pieces were there. The technology, a lot of technology in cardiology, you know, beginning with something as straightforward as an electrocardiogram. But all the other things, that drugs, you know, statins in particular, probably the biggest lifesaver of all of the statins. Now, but these things you could see were going to happen because the kind of technology that's used, catheterization, pressure measurements, echocardiograms, these all came out of World War II. And this was an aftermath.
A lot of it through Boston, too, with the likes of Franny Moore and Dwight Harkin and others who came back from treating American soldiers in England. They were flown in, dying, and they took every kind of chance to save desperate situations. All that changed heart surgery. Doctors were being made incredibly bold by the emergency of wartime casualties.
Well, I think, you're perfectly right. What actually happened was that chest surgeons, and chest surgery at the beginning of World War II was basically surgery for tuberculosis. And there was a lot of it. There was a lot of surgery for tuberculosis at that time, even though streptomycin was on the scene. When they went into the military and then when they came to the front, they encountered patients who had been shot and with bullets remaining in the heart, but alive. And so the chest was mangled. They'd open the chest, and then they would extract that bullet from a beating heart. They'd never done that before. And that is how they became heart surgeons. And they came back and said, okay, now we have done this. I think it was in 1945, so 3 years after the war, when Dwight Harkin, whom I knew well, and another surgeon working virtually at the same time, Charles Bailey in Philadelphia did the first mitral valve surgery quite successfully. And both of them had come back from the war and had learned at the front that you can operate on the heart. The concept of operating on the heart was ridiculous to surgeons. So all of this was building up. And the problem was the greatest problem, the greatest health problem in the nation and in the industrialized world. Now, I think that I have been a witness and a sometimes player, and it's been terrific. I think that a lot of problems have been solved. There's a lot of places we still have to go, but I think that the era of the brain is where cardiology was 60 years ago. First of all, the epidemic of Alzheimer's, which is hitting us, is like the epidemic of heart attacks in 1950. There are analogies. You know, it seems to be coming out of the blue. Yes, there seem to be family histories, seem to make a difference, but you're not really quite sure which gene is it and so forth. People in the neurosciences are working extremely hard on this. The genetics is being hammered out. Alzheimer's is beginning to appear very much like hypertension, that is sort of a wastebasket of many conditions that come out. It's probably not a single disease. Well, if I came out of medical school today, I would go into the neurosciences. I would be trained in basic neuroscience and then begin to apply that to individual patients and then to populations. That's what I think the next 50 years I got to bring.
Dr. Brownwell, thank you so much for an incredible lifetime in medicine and for generously giving us this conversation.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed seeing you, and I hope that I haven't confused people too much.